Hello, I'm Steve Caldwell, and welcome to the Manager Mojo podcast, where we use our mojo to create inspired leaders who are transforming people and the world around them. Now, let's get started by recognizing someone who's doing something good. I'm so excited today to get to share with you that I have created a wonderful platform for you guys to learn about management and leadership. It's called LEAD, L-E-A-D, Leadership Education and Development, and you can find it at lead.managermojo.com. That's lead.managermojo.com. Now, you guys can sign up. You'll find that it's amazing content, and it's going to help create the community so you can share what you're learning, can tell me what you would like to learn yet that we don't have yet up on our training site, and we'll create it for you. I know that you're going to love it. So click on the link in this post and make sure that you go sign up for lead.managermojo.com. That's LEAD, Leadership Education and Development.
Oh, I feel good. I knew that I would not. I feel good. I knew that I would not. So good, so good. I got you.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Manager Mojo Show. Steve Caldwell here, and I'm thrilled today to introduce my special guest, Michael Gorton. Now, Michael is the author of his new book, Forefathers and Founding Fathers, and we're going to talk a little bit about his book today, but I want you to know that Michael has a very deep background in business and leadership, and I know we're going to have fun talking about a lot of different things today. Michael is a serial entrepreneur who has founded 8 companies. He holds degrees in physics, engineering, law, and earned all of them while working full time. So I want you, all of my listeners, to know that I already recognize that I'm the dumb one here today, but I'm really looking forward to hearing from Michael. Now, he's a prolific author. He's actually written 5 books, this fifth book is the book we're going to talk about, Forefathers and Founding Fathers. He's an 11th generation descendant of Samuel Gorton, and Samuel Gorton is considered one of the founders of Rhode Island, and I'm sure that we'll get some special information from Michael about that today. He's a martial artist and an avid mountain climber. Michael, welcome to the Manager Mojo Show today.
Thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, the pleasure's all ours, and I look forward to hearing from you today. And before we jump off into our topic, why don't you share with our listeners what fun thing that you've been up to lately outside of work?
Well, I have a 11-year-old son who 3 years ago was diagnosed with leukemia. And in my family, we always try to find ways to turn negatives into positive. And I just got back a few days ago from the Grand Cayman, where that 11-year-old just got certified as a scuba diver. So that's a really fun event for father and son, but it's a demonstration of persistence and again, turning bad into positive.
I love it. Congratulations on that for both you and your son. That's a great experience to share together. And thank you for sharing that with us today.
Sure.
Michael, if you don't mind, I would like for you to kind of tell us a little bit about your perspective of why you wrote the book Forefathers and Founding Fathers, and what can viewers and our readers actually look forward to in learning?
I started the book thinking I was going to be writing a story about a derelict forefather of mine who had been beaten and thrown out of towns in the early 1630s colonies, and what I found when I started doing the research was that Samuel Gorton was indeed publicly beaten and thrown out of towns, but not for the reasons that I thought. People hated him, and they hated him because he believed in ideals that just were not common at the time. Mm-hmm. He believed in equal rights for women. He believed in no slavery. He believed in democracy and freedom of religion. And, you know, when we think about the Pilgrims and the founders of Plymouth and Boston, we think of these sweet, innocent guys that came from Europe to have religious freedom, and that just wasn't the case in the beginning.
Absolutely, it was not the case. History and reading about our founding fathers has always been a really fun topic for me personally, so I get that. And these ideals, they truly set the foundation for what I call true leadership. Because without true leadership, I don't think that without ideals, I don't think true leadership can exist. So how did you, you started out with one perspective, and then you began to get a different perspective about founding fathers. How do you think that actually impacted everyone during that day and ultimately even today?
Well, during that time period, I don't think that Samuel ever believed that he was going to have an impact. He just had ideals, and he wasn't willing to give up on them. Mm-hmm. But I think that the true story behind what he did was that regardless of how many towns he got kicked out of, or how many times he was beaten publicly or sentenced to death, he stayed persistent with his goal. And I think from a leadership perspective, persistence is what always prevails. So during his lifetime, Samuel Gorton never realized the value of what he had done. I think it took a couple of generations till the John Adams and the Thomas Jeffersons. And one of Samuel Gorton's great-great-grandsons was a general in the Revolution named Nathaniel Greene. So those who know Revolutionary War... know Nathaniel Greene, and Greene was very, very proud of his great-great-grandfathers, both Samuel Gorton and John Greene, who played a big part of the foundings of those principles that Jefferson and Adams wrote into our Constitution.
And that's just beautiful. I know that you characterize the book itself. I know it's technically a work of fiction. Is that correct?
It is, but I think from the perspective of definitions, you call it historic fiction if there's dialogue and you cannot substantiate that dialogue.
Right.
So if Samuel and his wife are sitting in a chapter of the book talking about things, we don't know what they really said in their living room in front of the fire. So it's called fiction because of that.
Got it. I just want to clarify that for our listeners. Now, when you look at the conversation, these ideals, what really stood out to you what was it in his character that really caused him to really kind of lock onto these and have them become his ideals?
Well, he was a young haberdasher in London before he came over to the colonies. And he fell in love with his partner's daughter. So his partner was a man of great education. Samuel was not. And that partner educated his daughter, which was very rare in the 1600s.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mary Maplett was her name. And when Samuel Gorton met her and fell in love with her, he was, number one, educated by her quite a bit, and also lived a lifelong love story with her. But I think it was her level of education that really, you know, brought Samuel Gorton up to that next notch. What he had was persistence. What she had was education.
That's incredible. I actually believe that if we're going to be honest, for most of us guys, it's our wives that educate us anyway.
True.
It's wonderful that the example was started so long ago. So obviously, I mean, he looked at equal rights for women. That would be one of the first things. But what were some of his democratic ideals?
Well, Samuel believed that we should have democracy in the new colonies, and Boston and Plymouth were what were called theocracies. So the church basically ran the colony, and Samuel wanted elected people that were not necessarily part of the church. He thought there should be a distinction between the government and the church.
Mm-hmm. And as we know today, that still continues in this country, doesn't it?
That's correct. And by the way, there's a really interesting kind of side story. When he first came to the colonies, Samuel met a lady by the name of Anne Hutchinson. And Anne was also educated like Samuel's wife, Mary. And she believed in giving what were called conventicles or little sermons in her home. And they got very popular. And because of that, she was thrown out of the Boston colony and formed a new colony in Portsmouth, Rhode Island. And that colony ultimately drove her out. She and her family were massacred by the Indians in what is now Long Island. And upon the event of her massacre, the leadership in Boston said, "See, this just proves that women like this should not exist. God was showing everybody by this family massacre that women shouldn't be equally educated." So now here's the great twist on that. If you've ever been to the State House in Boston, Massachusetts, on one side of the steps is the statue of John Kennedy, and on the other side, Anne Hutchinson. So, you know, I think Boston figured it out ultimately and got it right. And Anne and Samuel, during the time that she was still alive, were good friends and collaborated quite a bit to try and change the colonies to what they ultimately became.
Well, you know, these so many people don't really understand. They look at history and they think that things like women's right to vote and suffrage and all that happened in the early 1900s, and that it never was prevalent before. But what they don't realize is that hundreds of years of pushing for these ideals planted the seeds that all of us are created equal. And it's wonderful that when you can go back and look at the original founding of the country, you can see these ideals. And know that, okay, these are things that we call sacred today, sacred tenets of our own belief in our society today. Now, when you looked at your research, you know, obviously you said he was into haberdashery at that time. So do you trace your own business interest all the way back to him? Did he continue those, or... What were some driving influences for yourself that really caused you to want to be a business guy that you are?
Well, I don't, you know, I sort of lived in darkness. Since I've written this book, I've discovered lots of my quote-unquote cousins, also with the same last name, Gorton, around the family, that knew the history. But I really didn't know much when I was growing up. My family was relatively poor. We traveled around the world as a very large family of an Air Force sergeant. And, you know, we were one of those families that ate macaroni and cheese and made our own Christmas presents, so to speak. And so I didn't really know this story all that well. But the thing that my parents did that I think are in line with Samuel Gorton and virtually all leaders that are successful was they instilled the persistence that that you really need. You know, those that start on projects and give up before they're done never succeed, and those that keep at it always succeed.
I totally agree with you. I think persistence is that common thing that you got to have. So would you give us your definition of persistence?
Well, you know, I wish I had it in front of me. There's a great quote by Calvin Coolidge that I would welcome, you know, all of your listeners to pull up. Just pull up the Calvin Coolidge quote on persistence. But essentially it is, you know, you can't be insane about never giving up, because there are some things that you just shouldn't do, and being right. persistent about them is not right. But anything that's really worth doing, you should stick with it, mm-hmm. no matter what happens, because in life we have ups and downs, we have potholes, and we have to figure out how to get through them.
And so let's talk about some of those ups and downs that Samuel actually experienced, because for heaven's sakes, he had probably more than any person that I've ever looked at. So why don't you share with our listeners what were some of those ups and downs that he had?
Sure. Well, you know, start in London, in the haberdashery. His father-in-law and partner died. And then the haberdashery had to be split amongst all the children. And therefore, there wasn't enough income. It was during a time in England where there was lots of turbulence. And obviously, a well-educated woman and their different views on religion, they decided to come to the colonies. And for rich people at the time, well, I guess rich people didn't come to the colonies, but those that wanted to just come and see and had money, they came over on a nice ship. But all the rest of the people in the Great Migration were in the hold of a cargo ship, and there was sickness, and a lot of people just didn't make it. And remember, this is the very beginning of the colony, so you came over to a sometimes hostile country where you had to figure out how to provide your own food. And then add on top of that, the fact that you don't have the same beliefs as the colonies that you're living in. And you know, you move to one and put all of your efforts into starting your home, and then you get thrown out of it. And in Samuel Gorton's case, he got thrown out of the Plymouth colony in the middle of the night of the coldest winter up to then recorded. And so now you have a guy who grew up in England who doesn't really know the cold all that well, who's stuck trying to figure out how he's going to survive through one of the coldest nights he had ever seen.
Wow.
So those kind of things were his challenges.
Now, so he gets thrown out. I mean, he obviously gets he gets in trouble and for his beliefs. But ultimately, he actually, if my history's right, didn't he become president of the Rhode Island Society?
Yes, he did. He served a number of offices later, but during his lifetime, the Boston colony, the Connecticut colony, the surrounding colonies never truly accepted the ideals that he believed in. And so he and Roger Williams are the two that are given credit for founding the Rhode Island colony. They were kind of an outpost. In fact, both Roger Williams and Samuel Gorton took trips back to England to secure what they called patents at the time, but legal documents stopping the surrounding colonies from attacking them.
Yeah, and I don't. Maybe most people don't realize that all of these colonies, they fell directly under the power of the king. And so they had authority based upon whatever the king gave them or didn't give them. And I mean, it was really kind of a, you know, they talk about the Wild West, but I don't think they ever really appreciate just how wild it was trying to start these colonies back in the 1600s.
And one of the other things that we haven't really mentioned yet is what was going on with what we now call the Native Americans, but what then they called the Indians.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the colonists thought that they should just take the land from the Indians. And of course, that created some wars, a few relatively well-known ones like King Philip's War.
Mm-hmm.
Samuel Gorton and his family were very much involved in those, but they supported the rights of the Indians. So they thought that the land should be purchased from the Indians and that the English colonists should communicate and live peacefully with the Indians.
and yet we've caused ourselves so much trouble over the decades by not having the right attitude toward other people, right?
That's often the case.
It is often the case. And, how would you actually characterize Samuel's leadership style, if you were to give it a category, or how would you describe it?
Well, he knew what he believed, and he was consistent in that belief. And remember, he was always going uphill against the beliefs at that time, and so he never really had the opportunity to peacefully live in a leadership role. He was always under attack, and so I think that's a different kind of character than, well, maybe I shouldn't say that. You know, you look at Washington, D.C., and one side or the other is always under attack, so maybe maybe that's not the case.
I would even suggest that even in business today that when you really look at everybody in leadership, at some point or another, you're going to be under attack.
Right.
The question is, you know, what do you believe, and are you consistent in that belief? Are you willing to fight for that belief? And you know, it's always been one of the great characteristics of leaders is that they were consistent, no matter who we look at throughout our history. And I personally wish that more of our education, that we encourage people more to look at the early founding of the colonies before we became independent. I don't think that we really understand the history of how it actually planted commerce into the whole platform of discussion in the United States. But just the simple act of doing business, working with those people that were already on the land, because they didn't have enough people and enough resources to conquer everybody, did they?
No, not in the beginning, but I think later, by the time King Philip's War started, the flow of English colonists was so great that the truth is the Indians really didn't stand a chance. And it's unfortunate that they got into the conflict in the first place, because it was bloody for both sides.
Right.
There was no real question from those that really knew that whether or not the Indians or the English would prevail, just because the Indians were outnumbered and outgunned.
Michael, I know the book is the ratings are awesome on it, and I know it'll be a great read. What do you hope that your readers will gain from really reading this book and treasuring the historical accuracy of it?
Well, I think, you know, the thing about history is that it can be boring, and the goal of this book was to keep it interesting. So rather than all of the colorful language, we get right down to the story and tell the story of this man and some of the other characters in those early colonial days. But, you know, ultimately, what I'd like is for everybody to enjoy the read, and so far, everybody I've heard from has, and I would like for the book to show them a piece of history that they didn't know existed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think those are worthy goals, and some that we certainly can gain from it. I don't know that people picked up on it. I just want to repeat it, that you're actually an 11th generation descendant of Samuel.
I am.
So that's pretty awesome, because so many of us don't, our roots don't go back that far.
Well, one of the things that I discovered somewhere along the way was a book written by a PhD out of Kansas in the 1970s and early 80s, and he traced the lineage of all of these Gortons around the country. And so, you know, we now, when I was a kid, I couldn't do this, but now a lot of us can just say, okay, I know my father and his father and his father and his father all the way back.
Absolutely amazing that you can do that. Do you see any lessons in your research that really those of us that are in leadership capacities today, what are some lessons that you think that you've learned and picked up from this discovering your own past and your own history and this beautiful story that we all can learn from? What would be the one or two things that you picked up?
Well, we never know what the final outcome is going to be. And in Samuel's case, he fought for something that he believed, but he never saw the ending of. And so I think, you know, that is unfortunate. Sometimes in our lives we set these goals and we put things in motion, but those things take 150 years, as in Samuel's case, before Thomas Jefferson and John Adams came along and put together the final element that became our democracy. So I think sometimes we have to remember that. But again, I want to go back to the underlying theme that I've said over and over again, and that is, it's all about persistence. You have to know what you believe, and if you believe in it, be persistent.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's wonderful for us to hear your story and what, and thank you for going and doing the research on this so that you can share the history of your family in an entertaining way, but also an educational way. I love books like this myself and know that I gain a lot from reading every single one of them, because persistence is one of those things that I talk about, and I've had a number of guests on the show that have talked about how important it is for managers and leaders to be persistent. But when people say, well, I'm persistent, what they usually, they take an incorrect attitude about persistence. They don't realize it needs to be based in your ideals, what you really believe in. And that can cause other issues that are greater than you can solve in your business life. And so I appreciate your making the connection for us that those bigger ideals, equal rights for women in Samuel's case, and no slavery, and the principles of democracy, you know, those things come from way back in our history. And Americans as a whole, I think, have a really poor appreciation for where those democratic ideals came from.
Right. So there is one more secret ingredient.
What would that be?
I'll tell your listeners, you know, offline when you and I were talking, you said something to me, and it is the other secret ingredient, and that is have fun. So, you know, persistence works until you just break down. If you're not having fun, obviously you have to believe in it, but have fun, you know, be lighthearted about it and have fun. And if you can take persistence and passion and marry them together, you've got a winning combination.
Absolutely, you do. And this has been a very, very fun dialogue for me today, just to have this opportunity to talk with you. I certainly want to encourage everybody to go get their own copy of Forefathers and Founding Fathers. And I know people are going to want to connect with you. So, Michael, how would you like for people to connect with you? What's the best way to get the book and to connect with you?
Well, the easiest place probably is Amazon. They pretty much control the book world these days. And they do a good job with it. So Amazon is a great place to get the book. I'm from the old school, so I like the print. But obviously, you can get print and digital version off of Amazon. And then I love email. So I would say email me. My my email address is on our Facebook page. It is obviously facebook.com/forefathersfoundingfathers. We took the and out, so it's just Forefathers Founding Fathers.
Gotcha. Forefathers Founding Fathers, and that's on your Facebook page as well. And for those of you that are listening now and you're running, I'll make sure we put links in this post so that you can easily go to Michael's Facebook page and to buy the book. I certainly recommend that. Michael, what's the final recommendation that you would have for our listeners today that you just say, you know, okay, if you take away one little thing today, I want you to take this away. What would that be?
I would say persistence and passion. Just remember those two ingredients.
Persistence and passion, and it's obvious that you're both of those qualities yourself, Michael. Founded eight companies. You run, you practice martial arts, you're a mountain climber. We didn't have time to talk about that today, but it's obvious to me that you don't waste any time whatsoever. And thank you so very much for sharing your wisdom with our listeners today. And we wish you great success in the book and look forward to hearing more wonderful things from you in the future.
Okay, Steve, all the best to you and Manager Mojo.
Thank you very much. Thanks for joining me today, and I hope you really enjoyed the broadcast and that you're finding it very valuable. If you do, please leave a review on iTunes. We certainly would appreciate it. It would help share the show with others. And as always, if I can help you, please email me, Steve@ManagerMojo.com. Would love to have a conversation. Take care.